Welcome back to the Crimson Playhouse podcast. I'm your host, Crimson Renee, and I'm so excited to have you here for episode 2. Today, we are diving into chapter 3 of The Velvet Muse, my serialized romance audiobook that brings you love, longing, and late night jazz in the heart of Baywood Heights. But before we get into today's chapter, let's do a quick recap of what's happened so far. Previously on The Velvet Muse. In chapter 1, we met Liza Thornberry, a woman with jazz in her veins and her father's legacy resting on her shoulders. After leaving Los Angeles behind, she returned home to Baywood Heights to revive her late father's iconic jazz club, The Velvet Muse. But the past still lingers, especially in the form of Mason Harris, the ex-fiancé who broke her heart and never quite left her world. In chapter 2, we saw Liza wrestling with old wounds and new pressures. With the club's grand reopening approaching, she's determined to prove herself, but Mason's presence keeps stirring emotions she isn't quite ready to face. Now in chapter 3, tensions continue to rise as Mason has something he needs to get off his chest. But alright, it's time to settle in, grab your favourite drink, get comfortable, and let's step into the world of The Velvet Muse together. This is chapter 3. Chapter 3. I woke up to the soft glow of morning seeping through the cracked blinds and the weight of 3 simple words still sitting heavy in my chest. We need to talk. Mason's text had haunted me through the night like a song I couldn't turn off. I tossed and turned, trying to guess what he meant. Was it closure, a confession, or worse? Was he about to drop something I wasn't ready to hear? When my alarm finally dragged me from bed, I was groggy, annoyed, and tired of replaying the worst-case scenarios in my head. I pulled on jeans and a hoodie, splashed cold water on my face, and told myself to get over it. Whatever Mason had to say, I'd survive. Downstairs, the sounds of drills, hammers, and men shouting instructions filled the air like an industrial symphony. The scent of sawdust mingled with the faint lingering aroma of coffee. Mason stood near the stage, his broad shoulders framed by morning light streaming through the dusty windows. Clipboard in hand, he was directing his crew with a calm authority that made him seem like the only one in the room not sweating bullets. I paused, watching him. He looked steady, like someone who wasn't carrying a million unresolved emotions. How did he do that? How did he stand there completely collected while I felt like my life was a chaotic mess of grief, guilt, and old flames that wouldn't die? Gonna stare at him all day, or are you planning to help out? I jumped slightly as Marcy appeared beside me, grinning and holding a tray of coffees. I rolled my eyes and grabbed a cup. What would I do without you? Crash, burn, probably both. She teased, nudging me with her elbow. Her gaze flicked toward Mason. So, did you talk to him yet? Nope. I sipped my coffee, hoping it wouldn't drown the nervous energy buzzing in my veins. I'm waiting for him to bring it up. Marcy raised an eyebrow. You're not even a little curious about what he wants to say? Of course I'm curious, I admitted, lowering my voice. But I'm not in the mood for emotional landmines before noon. Fair point, she said with a chuckle. But you know, you can't dodge him forever. By mid-afternoon, my hands were covered in dirt, my hair frizzed beyond repair, and my t-shirt clung to my back from the heat of the work. But for once, I felt a strange sense of progress. The Velvet Muse was slowly shedding its shell of neglect. Marcy and I had spent hours in the back storage room digging through boxes of forgotten memories. Old menus, ticket stubs, and jazz records my dad had probably hoarded like treasures. We laughed over some of the ridiculous promotional flyers, but every time I found something personal, his handwritten notes or scribbled song ideas, my chest tightened.
Hey, Liza.
Mason's voice cut through the hum of the background noise, and I turned sharply. He stood in the doorway, leaning slightly against the frame, his gaze softer than usual.
Can you come and look at something outside?
He asked, his voice calm but unreadable. Marcy shot me a look that said, "You got this," but I barely nodded as I followed him into the alley behind the club. The alley was cooler, the shade offering a relief from the sun, but the air between us was thick with the weight of unsaid things. Mason gestured to an old rusted pipe that dripped water steadily onto the cracked pavement.
"This needs replacing,"
he said. I crouched to inspect the pipe, frowning at the slow drip. "Figures," I muttered. "Just add it to the list of things falling apart." For a moment, neither of us spoke. The distant noise of the crew working inside faded, leaving only the rhythmic drip of water between us. Mason shifted, the clipboard in his hand serving as some kind of shield, but I could tell he wasn't focused on it. He exhaled slowly.
"I've been thinking about what happened."
His voice was quieter now, less controlled. I stood, brushing dirt off of my hands. "And?" He looked directly at me, his dark eyes filled with something raw.
"And I wanted to say I'm sorry for how things ended, for what I said back then. I've been carrying that around for a long time."
The sincerity in his voice disarmed me. I hadn't expected him to be so direct. "Okay," I said softly. "Thanks for saying that, but it wasn't just you, Mason. I wasn't innocent in this." He nodded, but his jaw tightened.
"Maybe, but I still don't understand why you left, why you didn't say goodbye. I woke up one day and you were just gone."
The resentment simmering beneath his words hit me like a punch. I swallowed hard. "I was hurt. You and my dad. I felt like I didn't belong here anymore. Leaving was the only option I saw." Mason ran a hand over the back of his neck, exhaling sharply.
"Do you know how many nights I stayed up wondering if you were okay? If you were happy?"
His voice cracked, just slightly, before he steadied himself.
"I cared about you, Liza. I still do."
His words hung in the air, and for a moment, I forgot how to breathe. I wanted to ask if he had thought about me as much as I'd thought about him, but something in his eyes, the way he looked at me, like he was both angry and heartbroken, made me hesitate. "It didn't feel like you cared back then," I whispered. He winced.
"I know, and I can't change that. But it doesn't mean I wasn't trying."
He shook his head, as if frustrated with himself.
"I don't know if I can forgive you for leaving."
The honesty cut deeper than I expected, and I felt the sting of tears welling up, but I blinked them away. "I'm sorry, Mason. I really am." He nodded slowly, his gaze softening.
I want you to be okay. That's all."
"I am," I said, though I wasn't sure if it was true. We stood there, the silence between us heavier than any argument we could have had. Eventually, Mason gestured toward the club.
I should get back inside.
Yeah, I said softly. Me too. As the workday wound down and the golden haze of twilight spilled through the windows, I buried myself in yet another dusty box of forgotten memories. My fingers brushed against old concert flyers, each one a time capsule from when the Velvet Muse had been alive with laughter, music, and magic. I barely noticed Marcy's approach until she tapped me on the shoulder, her grin wide and her eyes dancing with excitement. "Come on," she said, grabbing my arm before I could protest. "I want you to meet someone." I stumbled after her, my curiosity piqued, but my mind still tangled in the mess Mason had left behind earlier. She led me toward the bar, where a man stood with a saxophone case slung over his shoulder. He was mid-conversation with one of Mason's crew, his deep, easy laugh cutting through the ambient noise like a melody in its own right. When he turned toward us, I was struck by the sheer magnetism of him. Tall, with freshly styled locks that framed his face, he had a presence that was impossible to ignore. Like the air bent just slightly to make room for him. His easy smile carried the kind of warmth that could melt any tension, and the casual way he stood, one hand resting lightly on his sax case, was pure confidence, effortless, unapologetic. "Liza, this is Maxwell Hayes," Marcy said, her tone brimming with pride. "He's a saxophonist making serious waves in the jazz world. Maxwell, this is Liza Thornbury, the woman bringing the Velvet Muse back to life." Maxwell's gaze lingered on mine, his smile deepening as he extended a hand.
"Liza Thornbury," he said, as if savoring the name. "The name alone sounds like music."
I rolled my eyes, but shook his hand. His grip was warm, firm, not too much, not too little, just right.
"Flattery? Bold move for a first impression."
"Bold is kind of my thing,"
he said with a wink, making Marcy snort behind me. "And modest, too," I teased, trying to hide the fact that his charm was disarming me. Marcy grinned. "Maxwell's got quite the following. I was just telling him about the soft opening, and he's interested in helping out."
Maxwell nodded.
"I'd love to perform here. A place like this deserves to shine again, and I'd be honored to be a part of that."
His confidence threw me for a loop. He wasn't cocky, but he wasn't hesitant either. So different from the quiet, smoldering intensity Mason carried. Maxwell felt like a burst of sunlight after a storm, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to bask in it or put up my umbrella. I hesitated before replying, unsure of what to say.
"Well," I said finally, "we'll see. The place still needs a lot of work before it's ready for performances."
"I've got time,"
he replied, smooth as silk.
"Just let me know."
As Maxwell moved to help Marcy stack a few old chairs, I felt the air shift behind me. I glanced over my shoulder and found Mason standing a few feet away. His gaze wasn't on me. It was locked on Maxwell. His expression wasn't angry, but there was something sharp about the way he looked at him. Like he was analyzing every word Maxwell had just said. Then, without a word, Mason turned and walked toward the stage, picking up a heavy stack of wooden planks as if they weighed nothing. His movements were measured, controlled, but there was tension in the set of his shoulders that betrayed the storm brewing beneath the surface. Mason didn't say another word to me before he left that evening, but his presence lingered, haunting the edges of my mind like the last notes of a song you can't forget. Later, as the stars began to dot the night sky, Marcy and I sat on the stone wall outside the club. The air had cooled, and the rhythmic hum of the crickets filled the space between us. I leaned back,
my fingers absentmindedly picking at the label on my water bottle.
"So," Marcy said, breaking the quiet, "how'd it go with Mason?"
I sighed, my shoulders sagging under the weight of the question.
"He apologized for everything, or at least for most of it."
Her eyebrows shot up.
"Wow, that's big."
She paused, as if choosing her next words carefully.
"I saw him when he came back in after you two talked. He looked affected, like he's holding himself together, but it's not as easy as he wants it to look."
I blinked, her words catching me off guard.
"You think so?"
Marcy nodded. "I know so. Mason's not the type to wear his heart on his sleeve, but I've known that man long enough to see through his poker face. That conversation did something to him. He's just trying to figure out how to deal with it."
I stared down at the bottle in my hands, twisting it back and forth.
"I don't know," I admitted. "I'm glad he said it, but it doesn't magically fix everything. There is still too much history."
"Of course," she said gently, nudging me with her elbow. "But it's a start."
I nodded, my gaze drifting to the empty street ahead.
A start. That's all it was. But a start of what? A reconciliation? Closure? Or something messier? Something that could unravel everything I was trying to rebuild? I didn't know. And maybe that uncertainty would have to be enough for now.
If you want even more of the Velvet News, including bonus scenes, exclusive content, and early access to upcoming chapters, make sure you join me over on Patreon. That's where all the behind-the-scenes magic happens, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. Thanks for listening. I will see you next week. Make sure you're there for Chapter 4.